We all know we're supposed to love our neighbor. But what about that neighbor? The one who tests your patience, pushes your buttons, parks in your spot? In this series, we'll talk about how to deal with difficult people without losing your patience, your values, or your sense of humor. Because Jesus didn't say, love your neighbor unless they're annoying. Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself.
Welcome to the final week of our series called Love Your Neighbor, Even That One. The one who takes up two seats on the airplane intentionally, you know, the guy who spreads out, uses both armrests. The one who dresses weird just to annoy you. The one who is always on their phone. The one who may be sitting right next to you right now. No, don't look over. Keep looking at me. In this series, we're learning how to respond, how Jesus teaches us to respond to difficult, demanding, and troublesome people with wisdom, grace, and love. Jesus told us to love everyone, but that doesn't mean you have to let other people define you, control you, waste your time, distract you from your destiny. Loving others also doesn't mean that you can't set healthy boundaries. Stick with what you believe to be true. Follow what you know deep down in your spirit, even if others disagree. But as we said last week, sometimes the least likely person is the one God will use to lift you up when you need it the most, move you closer to your purpose, and help you achieve God's plan for your life. So don't be so quick to throw in the towel, cut your losses, and walk away from that nasty neighbor. God knows how to turn the hardest heart into a heart of gold. Now today, on this last day, we're going to look at one last scenario, difficult situation involving difficult people. I want to talk to you today about when people pass you. Over the years, I've come to the conclusion that my brother is a superior human being compared to myself. He is kinder, gentler, more generous, more patient than I. When I get upset because something's unfair, he tells me to calm down. God will take care of it, make it right. When I get impatient because he's driving 10 miles an hour under the speed limit, he tells me to relax. We'll get there eventually. Of course, he's right, but I still don't like it. It's annoying. He's the same way at the airport. You know how everybody tries to get to the front of the line, pretending to not notice the boarding group on their boarding pass, right? The group number on their boarding pass. Well, my brother, he just smiles and lets them cut in line. No big deal. Even in first class, he waits until everyone gets off the plane before him. Me? Not a chance. I'm up like a shot, bagged down, aisle blocked. I'm going to be among the first to get off that plane. Why? Because like most people, I don't like it when others get ahead. I don't like it when others get more money, more respect, more admiration, more anything, more YouTube likes, more parishioners, more space in the overhead compartment. I don't like it, and maybe you don't either. When people pass you up, move ahead by pushing ahead, take more than their fair share, race to the front of the line, it hits a nerve, doesn't it? Stirs up some feelings of jealousy and resentment, makes you feel overlooked, like maybe you need to start doing that too. Take some liberties, take advantage, cut some corners, do what they're doing, maybe give them a taste of their own medicine, or just quietly, passively, aggressively sit back and wait for them to fail. Either way, let's be honest, that person, the one who's always trying to get ahead by any means possible, is one of the hardest to love. But instead of getting angry, fuming on the inside, imagining the fires of hell consuming them, the best thing you can do when people pass you by unfairly is to stay humble and trust God to move you to where he wants you to be. In today's gospel, Jesus was invited to an upscale dinner party. Black tie, exclusive guest list, valet parking, the works, all the heavy hitters. The elite in town would be there, a veritable who's who of movers and shakers and high achievers. The dining room would always be set up the same way. The seats were arranged in the shape of a giant U, if you can imagine that, a giant U, and the host sits at one end of the table. To his left is the guest of honor, and then every seat, every position down the line from there is occupied by someone who is of successively lower and lower social standing, so that the guest at the far end of the table, on the other side of that U, opposite the host, is the least important person in the room. And everybody knows it. The problem was, back then, there were no place cards, no table numbers, no reserved seating. Instead, where you sat depended on who else was there. Guests were expected to figure out the pecking order during the cocktail hour, depending on how well-regarded, well-dressed, well-spoken the other guests were. And then once you moved into the dining room, you would take your place according to where you thought you stood in rank. Naturally, everyone wanted to be as close as possible to the host. So they would put on their finery, put on airs, try to make the best impression so they could get the best seats. But it was risky. If you misjudged, you know, overestimated your position, your place in the hierarchy, took the wrong seat, a seat that was too high, the host would come to you and ask you to move to a lower position, and that would be embarrassing. Jesus was watching this whole scene play out, people jockeying for position, vying for the top spots, puffing themselves up, trying to look important. He told the people who had been invited, he had told a parable to those who had been invited, noticing how they were choosing the places of honor at the table. Now, what's interesting and I think funny is that Jesus presents this parable as sort of a hypothetical situation. Like he's saying, you know, guys, if you happen to find yourself at a swanky affair, here's how you should conduct yourself. Here's how where you should sit. No one thinks he's actually telling them what to do at this dinner party. What was his advice? To take the lowest seat, the lowest position possible, instead of the highest. Then the host would come to you and tell you to move higher up. He would tell you to move up, not down. And everyone would be impressed. I can imagine all the guests nodding their heads. Yes, yes, Jesus, great advice. Good advice, Jesus, as they scrambled to take the best places at the table. Then Jesus turned to the host and said, when you hold a lunch or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, your relatives, your wealthy neighbors, in case they may invite you back and you have repayment. Rather, when you hold a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Blessed indeed will you be because of their inability to repay you. Yes, Jesus was speaking about serving and caring for the poor, but he was also making a dig on the host, telling him, basically, stop trying to impress everyone with your impressive guest list. At this point, that hypothetical situation flew out the window. It just got personal, and I'm sure that host was kicking himself for putting Jesus, adding him to the paperless post. As uncomfortable as it may have been, Jesus was using that moment to teach a radical truth. You don't have to push ahead to be honored. You don't have to compete, strive and strain, elbow your way to the top. You don't have to worry about who's passing you by, getting ahead of you while you feel stuck. Because as Jesus went on to say, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. You don't have to join the rat race. When you stay humble, God is going to move you to where you're supposed to be. In the scripture, there was a man named Zelophehad. Say that three times. Zelophehad. Anyway, he was an OG, what you call an OG Israelite, if I'm using that term correctly. He was one of the first. He was in that first generation to be rescued from slavery in Egypt. He watched Moses part the waters, followed him across the desert, was there when the Ten Commandments came down. Zelophehad was the real deal. He had seen it all. But before he could get into the promised land, Zelophehad passed away in the desert, like everyone in that first generation. But God had a plan. When the second generation, the next generation, entered into the land, he would divide up the territory among the 12 tribes, actually 11 tribes, I should say. The 11 tribes, he'd divide up the territory among the 11 tribes according to the size of the tribe. The larger the tribe, the bigger the territory, the more land they got. And then each family in that tribe would receive their allotted portion. Seemed like a great system, made sense. Only one wrinkle. Only men were counted. No big surprise there, ladies, right? But Zelophehad had five daughters, no sons. This meant that while everyone else would get their portion, their inheritance, their fair share, those five sisters would get nothing. Now, they could have shrunk back, given up, shrugged their shoulders, thought, well, that's just the way it is. It's always the men who run the show. Or they could have gotten bitter, tried to stir up division behind the scenes, undermine the community. But instead, they decided to let God fight their battles. They appealed to Moses, made their case, and argued why it was unfair. I can imagine some of the men in leadership pushing back, telling those women to stand down, be quiet. The law is the law, nothing you can do about it. Best you can do is hope to marry into a family with land. Only men count. Only men should be considered. But to his credit, Moses took the case to God. And God, guess what? He changed the rules. He ordered that the law be modified, adjusted permanently, so that those five courageous sisters and all women in similar circumstances would receive the land, the inheritance, and the respect they deserved. Go God, right? It might seem to you that people are passing you by, getting ahead. Maybe all your friends are getting married and having children while you're still looking for the right person. Coworkers less qualified than you keep getting moved up at work while you are always being passed over for that promotion. Or the people around you seem like they've got it all together. They know where they're headed. They've got a purpose, a calling on their lives. They're so focused, so motivated, while you just keep kind of drifting, not sure what to do next. Or maybe everyone in your friend group is having grandchildren, and you have no idea when it's going to happen or if it's going to happen for you. Can I encourage you? God is working behind the scenes. He is quietly preparing you for promotion. Just like those five daughters of Zelophehad, God's about to change the rules. He's going to move you, promote you to new levels, new opportunities, new horizons, and second chances. I know this from personal experience. When I graduated from law school many years ago, I went to work for a big law firm. Lots of great attorneys, offices around the world, well respected. I was assigned to a department that handled lawsuits between employers and employees. And then one of the partners in that department took me under his wing, showed me the ropes, let me work on some fascinating cases. He was a Christian and a man of deep faith, and so we got along great. And over the years, he brought me in on all of his cases. I was sort of like his go-to guy. He always challenged me, but I learned a lot from him and grew in my profession. But then, one day, the firm hired a new young lawyer, assigned him to the same department. He was fresh out of law school, didn't know a thing, green as could be, whereas I had 4 years of experience at that point. But pretty soon, that partner started taking a liking to the new guy, gave him all the cases. Within a few months, it became apparent, obvious to me, that I was being edged out. It didn't make sense. One day I was in, the next day I was out. I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't made any mistakes. I was good with the clients. But I got angry about it, got upset, blamed that new guy, thought he was trying to pass me by, get more than his fair share, race to the front of the line. He was so ambitious, such a climber. Everybody liked him. So I started avoiding him in the hallways. Wouldn't return his calls when he needed help. Gave him the cold shoulder. I'm not proud of that. But I knew it was wrong, but I let the jealousy, the anger, and the bitterness get the better of me. Sometimes we get so focused on who's passing us by, who's getting ahead, we feel left behind, worried about catching up and angry over the setback, that we can't see what God is doing for us in our own lives. We miss how he's moving and how his plan is unfolding. When I was preparing this message, I decided to look up that young lawyer. At the time, he was a young lawyer, online, see what he was doing today. I would like to report that he's on Skid Row, but just kidding. But fortunately, he's actually today a partner in the largest employment law firm in the world. And not only that, he's in charge of one of their departments. What's funny to me is that when I saw that, I didn't feel the least bit angry, bitter, or jealous. In fact, just the opposite. I felt nothing but happiness for him. For the first time, I realized he's where he's supposed to be, and God moved me to where I'm supposed to be. You may feel passed over. Things didn't work out like you expected. You're not getting what you deserved. Everyone else is getting ahead while you keep facing these obstacles in your health, your family, your finances, your personal goals, your career. But God sees what you're going through. He knows it's not fair. He knows you deserve more. Your time is coming. When you trust God's timing, when you believe in his plan for your life, when you have the courage and the trust to step back from striving and straining, trying to get ahead, take the lower position, let God do the promoting, then you don't have to force your way to the front or to the top. You don't have to fight for your position, because God is going to move you to the exact right position for you. So when that difficult person starts challenging you, climbing and competing against you, whether it's on the tennis court, at the club, in your neighborhood, at the dinner table, among your family members, or at work, wherever it is, don't take the bait. Stay in faith and know that God has the absolute best place at the table set for you. Don't get angry. Don't get upset. Just keep loving your neighbor, even that one.